Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour podcast featuring Dave Cariello, Andrew Juge, Ralph Malbro, and when he decides to show up, Kevin Hell. We are the perfect blend of Saints sincerity and stupidity.
How many RPMs would it take for the Juliocopter to actually fly away, and how many fumbles would happen as a result?
Well, that's a trick question because you can only fumble once.
If you're not having fun when your team is 11-2, back-to-back division titles for the first time in 50 years, then you need to stop watching.
And now, here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
All right, welcome to a special Sunday edition of Saints Happy Hour podcast. We are live streaming for the third consecutive weeks where it is not a total fucking disaster. Am I correct on that, Andrew?
Yeah.
You are correct. Yeah.
Well, so, I will say I had a chance to listen to the podcast that I did not attend last week. And I noticed that there was
it was addition by subtraction.
I mean, you say that, and yet I listened to talk about Kevin Scrotum.
Oh yeah, my buddy.
there was also talk of Kevin's rectum.
Yes,
I have a good friend of mine.
Dave shooting down my April Fool's greatness.
I got a good buddy of mine who's a regular listener to our podcast, and he's actually a big fan, and he very much appreciates what we do, actually. And he said last week he had to turn it off after Kevin started talking about his balls. He just that stuff makes him kind of cringe or whatever.
Where he draws the line. Who knew that people draw the line at talking about testicles?
Well, I can tell you what we don't draw the line at, and that's sports gambling. So I would like to recommend
Segue.
Yeah, damn, Ralph, you are a fucking master of segues.
So I want to recommend my bookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game betting, live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business for you fantasy guys out there, and even for over-under for fantasy players. We'll score each game. The NCAA basketball championship is tomorrow. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code HAPPY25 to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code HAPPY25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. You play, you win, you get paid. Terms and conditions apply. So I have to say, Andrew, two things that were really funny to me that happened over the weekends that are kind of not Saints related, but I think people will enjoy them anyway. David, who did our graphics for
not
the
me.
Saints Happy Hour after
not,
I think
me.
That he said they were the graphics that I paid for were fucking terrible. He did the graphics we currently have now. He is a big Virginia Cavalier fan. He emailed me and said, I have to mute you and Andrew. I can't take your Virginia negativity. I might not do any more graphics for the show. Because Andrew hates Virginia with the passion of 1,000 suns, and I just find Andrew's hatred of Virginia amusing. But Andrew called it the whole game. He's like, it doesn't matter what happens, Virginia's winning this game. I'm telling you. And it happened, Andrew, you were sad.
That was wild.
Yeah.
That was a wild.
Yeah. I told Ralph, like, I until the clock says 0-0, and in fact the clock did say 0-0 and UVA lost, and somehow they still won. But that's what they always do. They're on the ropes. The thing I find most annoying about college basketball is that there's been no upsets. This is like the only tournament ever where there's been 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds only pretty much advancing. And yet somehow UVA's path has been no higher than a 5 seed the whole way.
Here's the thing that David brought up that was really funny, I thought. He mentioned that the guy who – the Bill Voinovich, right, the referee that made the horrible call for the Saint in the Saints NFC Championship game, he's also a college basketball referee. He said, right. Wouldn't it have been amazing if he'd have made the call – against Auburn, then he could have been hated for all eternity by two separate fan bases in two completely separate sports.
So let me ask this question, because yes, last night I was camping in Mississippi with my son for Cub Scouts, but we did bring out a television and we were able to watch the game. And I saw what happened, but I since we've come home, I haven't really gone on the internet or watched TV. I know that, like, previously everybody feels that, like, the refs always favor Virginia, and are people now thinking that that was a BS call? I mean, because when we were there at the campsite, and one of the guys was like, "Well, you have to let the guy land. You have to let him land. If he doesn't land after taking the shot, then that's a foul." And we were all saying, so he was saying that was a legitimate foul. So I mean, do people feel like that was a legit foul, or people?
No, I think first of all, it's two things for me.
And by the way, this is a Saints podcast.
Yeah, the first thing is there was the blatant double dribble. I mean, Ty Jerome dribbles the ball off his foot, which could arguably be a kickball, then runs the ball down, picks it up, starts to dribble again. Like, that's a double dribble. So that should have been a turnover.
Remember that game, Double Dribble, on Nintendo?
Yeah, I do, actually. That was a great game. It was Super Nintendo. Yeah.
Super Genesis. Yeah. I probably played it on Genesis.
But they so they missed that call. Then, to me, the whole game – guys were getting murdered under the basket. They literally were not calling a foul if a guy was getting shanked. So, and that's why you saw at the end of the game there, with a minute left, both teams had three team fouls. And so they had to get a bunch of fouls in just to get the other team to the line, because they weren't blowing the whistle on anything. So I just feel like when you look at the massive contact that was happening under the rim the whole game, and they were swallowing the whistles, like, for them to blow the whistle in that moment when there was pretty light contact, I realize it's away from the basket, so it's a little bit different, but I just hate officials. Like, I mean, to me, it would be like officials saying, yeah, we're not going to call like light contact. And then call pass interference when they hadn't called it all game, or, you know, in baseball, like, it's what people always say about the strike zone. I don't care how much it deviates from a different umpire. Just make sure it's consistent.
Yeah,
that's the main thing they always say.
The only thing that made me angry, I mean, I don't really care about Virginia, or I don't care about Auburn. The only thing that made me mad about it was it made me remember the Saints got fucked all over again.
Yeah, so I agree. That was a part of it where it's just like, oh, great, refs, a controversial call. Refs affecting the outcomes of games in the dying seconds again. And it brought me right back to that dark place, man.
So that's a good point. So
what about today? Is today the worst day of your life? Yeah.
We really need like a wider array of sound bites. we're really milking the three that we've got.
We got more than three. We got like eight or nine.
But I mean, that's a good question, though. So, like, after this NFC Championship game, do we have – I forget. Somebody else – I didn't make this up. But, I mean, do we really have PTSD, post-traumatic Saints disorder? Like, any time in any – doesn't even matter the sport. If there is some bullshit egregious officiating error, like, that's it. We're going to, like, have flashbacks – you know, wake up in a cold sweat. We're going to like hide.
I do.
All of a sudden, we're going to hide under a table. You know, if we hear loud noises, it's going to set us off, you know, like back
I
in
do.
Nam.
Dave, I'll admit I do. I was going at people on Twitter and I was going at media people, because the thing that drives me nuts after the Saints got screwed in the NFC Championship game, one of the things that drives me the most nuts, besides the fact that the Saints didn't go to the Super Bowl, is the media, no matter how egregious the call, no matter that you can look at it and say it swung the outcome, the media will never admit
the outcome got swung. Like, I saw people saying, oh, the refs call against Auburn. Yeah, it affected the game. But let me tell you, the kid from Virginia sinking the free throws, he won the game. I'm like,
can we
no.
stop talking about UVA, please?
Yeah, it just annoys me that the media will never just say, oh, yeah, the ref fucked that up and the wrong team won. Like, they cannot ever bring
why you gotta
do
this to me, Ralph? Why you gotta do this to me, Ralph?
I know. I'm just torturing you. Well, Andrew, we don't have much to talk about because it's the deadest of dead periods for the Saints. They haven't signed Ziggy Ansah yet. They haven't made any moves. The only Saints.
I mean, I'll talk about Andy Tanner if it means I don't have to think about UVA.
Well, we
Is he on the team?
well, we're gonna segue to the draft is but 3 weeks away, and I know the Saints. They don't have any picks, so it's hard to get fired up. But we talked about it on the pre-show.
Well, hold on, let's sit on that for a second. So, is this the least excited you've been about a Saints draft that you can remember? I mean, Ditka, obviously, the year after they took Ricky Williams, that was pretty unexciting.
No, that was exciting at least in a sense of. It was complete. I know now it's like 19 years ago, so it's a generation ago. But and maybe people don't remember it quite as well. But that offseason and that draft was exciting because the Saints had gone from the Bill Kuharik Ditka era of we don't know how to deal with free agency and manage the draft to Randy Mueller and Hazlitt, where they signed like 15 dudes in free agency. And during the draft, even though they didn't have the first round pick, they had the rest of the picks and. Up to then, they were trying to maneuver, and it was rumors that they were going to do stuff. I mean, it was a different time on the internet, obviously. So there was excitement. I would say I haven't been this unexcited about a Saints draft since 2012, when they had traded the 2012 number one away for Ingram, and Goodell took away the number two because of Bounty Gate. So they didn't pick until the third round. I would say this is. The 2012
draft. Oh, that was the year we Akeem Hicks was our first pick, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that. I remember being like, we waited this long for who? We were furious. Saints fans were losing it, man, about Akeem Hicks.
Yeah. They were sure. So, I mean, this draft is unexciting. So that's why we did these draft spotlights for people who didn't catch the live stream and the behind the scenes talk that me and Dave did while we were waiting for Andrew to get connected with us. So we really tried to work hard to get people excited for this draft, and we feel like with the new revenue we have from the patrons and such, we have more access to do stuff. And the amazing thing is, Andrew, before we play the first Irv Smith one that people haven't heard, now that we have this budget. We've sent Andrew like all over the country, and he's talking to like scouts and people. They have given us nuggets that you wouldn't believe. They're just spilling their guts. I don't know if Andrew is taking them to bars or titty clubs or whatever, but he's getting these great
all of the above. Yep.
He's getting these great quotes. Now, the one thing we have to do, I read the quote because a lot of times the scouts are like, we can't go on the record. So I read the quotes and make them anonymous. For the first one, it'll be me reading the quote. But the other ones, we have got this great technology where any scout's quote, we turn it into, it sounds exactly like Andrew. It's the most amazing technology that we have. And these quotes are 100% possibly not real. It may be the Onion. But, you know, you have to judge for yourself whether you believe our information is as good as Mike Dettillier or Mel Kiper or Mick Shea. You can make that judgment for yourself, but we did these spotlights. We think they're legit. We think our information and our grading system that Andrew devised and worked on, we think it's legit, right, Andrew? We're proud of these.
Oh, I mean, I would stack them up against, you know, Mel Kiper and his what's his buddy again? I forget his name.
Todd McShay.
Oh, yeah. Those guys have nothing on us. In fact, I would not be surprised if after all this info is leaked and other, you know, organizations get it, there will be an owner offering us a GM job, much like the dude for the Raiders, another guy I'm blanking on his
Mayock.
Name. Yeah, Mayock. Yeah, we're gonna get offered a GM job based on these scouting reports.
I think there's a there's like a 5% chance that like right after the draft, Andrew is like, I'm leaving. ESPN Insider has hired me away because my nuggets and my ability to pull things out of scouts is unmatched. He's like the Adam Schefter of draft analysts. So we got the first one. Some people might have seen it on Twitter, but if you haven't, we're going to play it now. I think it's amazing. I think the information that we're going to give you guys these next 3 weeks is going to blow your mind, and you're going to be coming here. You're going to be wanting more of this. This is going to be the center of your draft day world. You're going to want to know what scouts are telling the Saints Happy Hour podcast. So here's our first draft day, Saints Happy Hour draft day spotlight. This week's Saints Happy Hour Draft Day Spotlight is Irv Smith Jr. of Alabama. The 6'2", 242-pound tight end potentially could carry on the grand tradition of his father, Irv Smith Sr., which was being a highly drafted tight end who disappoints Saints fans. Fun fact about Irv Smith Sr., his three-cone drill score in 1993 was sadness, drops, and irrelevance. Irv Smith Jr. has serious questions about his short arms. One anonymous AFC scout said, and I quote, "He has the arms of a fucking T-Rex. He can't even get cereal from the top shelf in the grocery. Would you trust a guy who needs a step stool to get Lucky Charms? Bill Belichick stays away from fat MILFs and tight ends with short arms. That's how Super Bowl titles get won." Irv Smith Jr.'s final Saints Happy Hour Draft Day Spotlight score, 7.8, with a hint of Saints Draft Day Legacy Sadness. This has been the Saints Happy Hour Draft Day Spotlight. I mean, you go anywhere, you're not going to get that kind of nugget. I mean, Andrew...
It hits hard.
Andrew was crisscrossing the country on secret visits, going to strip clubs. I mean, Andrew has no – because Andrew just wants to get you people the information. So he has no moral compass. So he would give drugs, strip clubs, you name it. He was plying.
Well, I want to thank everyone for their donations because it allowed me to fund the private jet to get to all these meetings.
Yeah, and that's why, like, if you – if you
Dave's mom especially, thank you for the private jet donation.
Yes.
Meanwhile, ask me how much of this money I've seen.
Well, we can't. I don't see any way. We got to give it all to Andrew for his expense report, his expense account. So that's why if you donate at the $3.28 level and you get to it by May, we give you a free beer koozie that Dave designed, and we can do more of this great draft day coverage. We can do it for the year, during the year, to preview other Saints related news. So we're gonna have, we got four more of these. We may do more. We try to do it as people that it's possible that the Saints could either pick at 62 or people we think they might move up to get. So Irv Smith, Do you feel good about him, Andrew? That the Saints drafting two people named Irv Smith and having them both be failures, that would be nearly impossible, perhaps. But so, how do you feel about the Saints if they would draft Irv Smith again?
Well, not that he was terrible; he was actually pretty good. But there is a Mark Fields also in this draft.
Oh my God!
So I'm just gonna throw that out there. So we could go double whammy with this draft and get both. I would personally love to get Irv Smith. It's funny the way you set this up because I agree. It kind of feels like legacy sadness was the term you used, which I really like. But I think he's a great player, and I think obviously the Saints need a tight end. Jared Cook will be nice for a year, maybe two, but they need youth. They need youthful talent at that position, and I don't think Irv Smith will fall to them. But if he did, I would absolutely take him.
Dave, when do you think, or as you're watching the draft, and let's take Andrew's that he really likes Irv Smith, and let's say the Saints do too. How far does Irv Smith have to fall before you start thinking, the 2020 Saints number one is in play for them to get Irv Smith. Like you know, like if he gets picked, if he's still there at 10, it's not low enough. But when does he
right.
when is he on the board where you're like, oh, 2020 is in play?
What's he like normally projected at right now?
He's projected in the mid to late 20s.
Oh,
I've seen him as high as 16 though.
Yeah. So yeah, he's probably going to go later first round. So, I mean, what is that noise? Is anybody else hearing that?
You're probably hearing me typing. I'm in the chat.
No, I'm hearing like I don't know, a weird whining noise. Anyway, it could just be my brain. But so I mean, I would say, you know, I guess maybe like, you know, the last one or two picks in the first round, I would say. I don't think the Saints are going to be trading up. I don't think the Saints are going to be trading anywhere into the 20s in the first round.
I think the cone of uncertainty starts at like 27, 28.
Yeah, I think we're kind of on the same page. I'm thinking like 20, 29, 30, but that I could see them trading up into that, but
if he's there,
you know, they get antsy. It's the first day they have, they're not going to have any action on day one. They're going to be antsy. They're going to be watching everybody else making these moves, getting these new players. And they're just going to like get that itch, you know, like we got to get it back. We got to get in the first round. And maybe they'll do something late. But other than that, I don't see it. I would say if he fell out of the first round entirely and he goes into day two, all bets are off.
If Irv Smith isn't picked in the first round, that day break until the evening where round two is, I mean, how much money would you bet that the Saints trade with Arizona to get that number one pick or number 33 to get Irv Smith?
They're going to trade for something. It's just a question of what.
That's right. They're not. There's no way they're standing pat.
You don't think there's any way they stay at 60? They're moving up from 62, is what you're saying.
If we were in Vegas and we were betting, I would be what I would put my money on. Yes.
A ninja coordinator says you're not crazy, Dave. He hears a whistle. Like a kettle.
Yes, exactly. That's thank you very
much.
Are
you still hearing it?
No, it's gone.
Okay. Hmm. I don't know. I don't hear it either. Which usually, if it's background noise,
if
it's a background noise, it's either my cat, me forgetting to unplug my laptop from the wall, or the cat's drinking water fountain, which has a hum in the background, but it's not a kettle noise. So you really like Irv Smith, Andrew. We made the joke profile. I just look at him and
he needs a stool to get his Lucky Charms.
He needs a stool to get his Lucky Charms. I don't like him. I don't want the Saints drafting another Irv Smith. I like the stat about the short arms. I have other guys that I like better.
You like the catch radius, huh?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. The thing is for Irv Smith, for the Saints to move and burn the 2020 first round pick, like Irv Smith's got it. He's not good enough for that. Like if he fell and they move from like 60 to like 35 and gave up like a 2020 second or whatever, you know, something like that, I'd be like, that's okay. But man, to me, giving up 62 and your 2021st for Irv Smith, I don't know. Like, giving away future first round picks is very, very bad business. And the Saints, it worked out okay with Davenport. I'd prefer them not to do it again. But if they're going to do it again, it's got to be for better than Irv Smith. What I'm saying. So that's the first Saints draft day spotlight. We'll have more as we go, and we might even have a couple next week. We might even have two. So you need to tune in. And if you're a patron, patrons may probably get a sneak preview of the draft day spotlight profiles. So you should become a patron at the $7 level so you can get the 4 extra podcasts a week. All right. So because we're in the dead period and we don't have that much to talk about, I asked you guys to think about this topic. And the reason why I thought about this topic was we did the spotlights, the patron spotlights, and I did one with Kips from Ireland, and I did one from somebody from Glasgow. And they told me stories about watching Saints games in United Kingdom, watching games in Thailand, watching games in a bar at 4 a.m. all by themselves, where they paid the bar to stay open so they could watch Saints games. So it got me thinking, Andrew, what's the weirdest place you watched or followed a Saints game? Not like the worst experience, but like the weirdest experience where you were watching or trying to follow the Saints.
Yeah. Well, when I moved, so I have a few that come to mind. I mean, when I moved this year, DirecTV was kind of stonewalling me for a couple weeks. And so I did not have DirecTV until I think the third week of the season. And so I was stuck going to Fuzzy's Tacos. I mean, there were several bars here in Charlottesville that had DirecTV, but they kind of didn't have great situations where, you know, I'd have to sit at a table and it was crowded and, you know, the Saints would probably be on one of the smaller TVs. So I kind of found that Fuzzy's Tacos had all the games and no one was in there for the most part. So like I could kind of have a booth to myself and the game right there. So like it was the best situation, but man, sitting for 3.5 hours in a Fuzzy's Taco.
Is that a chain? What's I don't know what Fuzzy's Tacos is.
Yeah, Fuzzy's Taco. There's one in Baton Rouge, I know.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, there's one in Baton Rouge right next to my in-law's house, but I don't think there's one in New Orleans. There might be one on Veterans, actually. There might be.
I know a guy named Fuzzy in Baton Rouge, and let me tell you something. You wouldn't want to go anywhere near his tacos.
But yeah, so that was pretty awkward. I mean, just sitting at a Fuzzy's Taco, I was really questioning my life. Like, my wife and kids are at home.
My wife.
I'm sitting at a Fuzzy's Taco for 3.5 hours and watching the Saints lose to Tampa at home and almost lose to the Browns at home. Because that's what was going on early in the season. So, like, I was really questioning my life. And, you know, I felt like I had to keep ordering beers because I felt guilty about being there for 3.5 hours. So I was, like, right on the cusp of, like, should I be driving home? Like, you know, it was fine. It was, like, 2.5-3 beers, but it was just, like, over, you know, a long period of time. But I don't know. Anyway, that was weird. When I was a kid – I lived in Paris, as you know, and for the most part, I would watch games. So back then, we had an American VHS player, and my grandpa, my dad's dad, would videotape every Saints game and mail it to me, and I would get it a week later. And back then, with technology, I really had no way other than an international call of finding out the score. There was no news in France wasn't reporting on NFL scores at the time, so unless I like read the Herald Tribune, there was no way I could really stumble on the score. So I would wait a week for the games and just watch them on tape. The one exception to that was whenever the Saints were on the Armed Forces Network, they would show one game a week. And occasionally, I mean, very rarely, because usually it was Cowboys or Redskins, but very rarely if they would be on the Armed Forces Network, my mom worked at the American Embassy and I could go watch them at the American Embassy. And that was just really weird because you're sitting there in a room full of Marines who are really rowdy. And obviously, like, they're abroad and, you know, they're holding guns and, you know, manning the station or whatever. So, like, watching football on Sunday is like the greatest night of their life, basically, you know, during their
pounding
their
beers. Are they like off the clock?
They're off the clock. They're pounding beers. And so I'm like, at this point, I'm like an 8-year. I'm like my son's age. And there's these blackout Marines like dropping F-bombs. My mom and dad are sitting there with me watching the games. And like, it's just kind of awkward for an 8-year-old to hear all these loose lip Marines while I watch the Saints. But like that, I mean, my parents let me do it because they're like, "You love the Saints. What are you gonna do?" So, but that was that was necessarily weird, but it was definitely awkward for me as a kid.
That's weird. My story is real. It's not.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Before we get to Ralph's story, I actually have some questions. For
yes.
No, I'm serious because some things while you were talking, Andrew, some things kind of just dawned on me that I had never even thought about, and I've known you for like 10 years now.
Yeah.
I knew that you lived in France, but when did you live in France? How long did you live in France, and from what ages?
Okay, so when I was 6 months old, I moved there, and I was there until I was 12.
Okay, stop right there. Okay, yeah. So this is what I never even thought about. Because I knew that you lived in France for a good part of your life or whatever. But this is what I never even thought about. This was the 80s, early 90s.
Correct.
This was before the internet. And you guys, all of you people that listen to this podcast, and you listen to both Ralph and Andrew, and I was talking about this with my friend who I was talking about earlier, who's a big fan, and he agreed with me. I was talking, you know, just both of you have this like almost like a bizarre photographic memory of Saints and the players and everything. I mean, I'm serious. I think you guys should be tested or something. But like, you guys, like more than anybody I know, I mean, you guys remember like just even the most random players. But my point is that, so Ralph, you lived in New Orleans, so it was easy for you to have access to the Saints games, Saints news, that kind of stuff. Andrew has all of this knowledge from his childhood that he still retains, and he had to acquire all of that knowledge in a foreign country that doesn't give a shit about football, that doesn't give a shit about NFL. And he just said right now he had to have his family mail him VHS tapes from the United States. Snail mail. This isn't email, people. Snail mailed him the tapes. And Andrew must have been so obsessed with the Saints that he would put them in his VCR. He'd watch them. And maybe that's actually – maybe that's why.
Well, so I think we're – I think the thing about this, Dave, is that I mean, I didn't really enjoy watching French TV. So when I would get these VHSs, I would just watch the game like 3 or 4 times.
That's what I'm saying. So
yeah.
So now
you're starting to understand.
Well, that's the answer. That's why Andrew remembers everything, because it was his only, you know, his only information, his only source of information, and he practically studied it when he was a kid.
Now the kids these days, they have Netflix and Amazon Prime, and they go to the movies and they do. You know, kids these days have all these different entertainment sources, and there's almost so much stuff for you to get into these days that it's like impossible to do it all. You just kind of dabble in everything. Me, I was watching Saints VHSs all day, every day. That's
so Andrew,
it.
Wow. So Andrew, what's the window of years for this? What this 6 to 12 where you're watching these VHS tapes? Like what Saints years are these?
And these are formidable. These are your most formidable years, by the way. Like,
what are these? Are these the more
the year I
years?
The year? Well, I was born in 1980, so like the year I got hooked was 87 when that first year they made the playoffs.
Okay. So this is peak. You were watching VHS tapes of peak Mora, like 87 and 93.
Oh yeah.
This is like, so this is good stuff. I mean, it isn't.
Yeah.
It isn't Ditka. It isn't even like the Mora decline years. This is peak Mora. So this is good stuff.
Peak
I mean,
Mora.
this is 12.
The Saints
10,
were good.
9.
I mean, they weren't winning playoff games, but they
were winning games. I mean, you
the
know,
regular season games were fun.
Yeah. So this was good.
But
this
I remember. I mean, speaking of photographic, like the year for me. So 87, 88, and then 89 was that year that Dalton Hilliard scored 18 touchdowns.
Oh,
and I liked LSU also, and my grandpa wouldn't do all the LSU games because you couldn't get them all on TV in New Orleans at the time. But, like, he'd send me a handful of LSU games too. And, like, I just thought Dalton Hilliard was, like, the greatest thing ever. And so for him to go to
remember,
the Saints.
College football was different then. LSU being on TV, whether it was CBS or ESPN, was a huge deal. They were probably only on probably maybe half their games, if that, you know? So it wasn't like it is now where LSU, you can watch them every week.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I just that's what got me hooked. I mean, I was into it you know, in 87 and 88. But like when Dalton Hilliard went from LSU to the Saints and then he had that massive year where he was an all pro, that was hooked, completely hooked.
Mm-hmm. So my story isn't quite as heartwarming as Andrew's. I was living in Oakland in 2006. And that was 2006. The Saints were rocking and no, I wasn't living in. Yeah, I was. So
that was the year after Katrina.
Yeah, the year after Katrina. So I'm in Oakland.
Reasons for
sure. And
did you make it back for the Gleason game or no?
I did. I went back. I went back for the Gleason game. I went back for the playoff game against Philadelphia. But it was the game against the Falcons. The road. It was the road game in Atlanta. So my girlfriend at the time, she got mad at me because she wanted me to go to this Herbalife pyramid scheme. I'm like, I'm not going to your champions Herbalife breakfast. I'm watching.
Do I look like Drew Brees and Advocare?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to that. I'm going down the street to the bar that was named the Big Easy Bar, and I'm watching the Saints play the Falcons. So I go down there, and the thing was, I'm going to try to say this in a politically correct way so I don't offend anybody. And it wasn't a gay bar. It wasn't an LGBT bar. But they had a big rally in Oakland that day for – I forget what it was, but it was a huge rally at Lake Merritt for the the community, the gay, yeah. I'll just say gay community because I'll just step over.
We'll call them TixBliss. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just say like the gay community because I'll just step over it 9,000 times. So the gay community has this giant rally, right? And this bar is like their staging area. So I'm going there and I'm watching the Saints and the Falcons and it's just a menagerie of the gay community of Oakland just showing up. Just wonderful people. And I sat next to a lovely person. Linda was her name. She was a huge Saints fan. And me and her bonded.
I feel like this story is going to end with Ralph saying that he lost a bet and that he had to do a Robert Kraft-style massage.
No. But me and Linda, we bonded and we drank. We got really excited over the Devery Henderson Hail Mary at the end, it wasn't Devery Henderson, it was Terrence Copper, his Hail Mary at the end of the first half.
Against the
Falcons.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just really fun because at the start of the game, it wasn't really that many people.
Is your girlfriend at the herbal shop right now?
Herbalife. She's probably hawking like vitamins or whatever. Herbalife is basically like Advocare. It's like that's like their competitor.
Like, but did your girlfriend know that you were there, like sweet, you know, kind of charming some other lady?
Linda,
yeah.
No. She didn't realize I was bonding.
How old was Linda?
How old was Linda?
Probably like in her like 50s.
Ooh.
And you were what, like about 30 at the time?
What's that? Late 20s.
And how old were you? You were like what, late 20s at the time?
I was like 30.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Linda was somebody that was at this bar that I was at, that I was watching the Saints game. She was getting ready for the gay pride march.
He didn't even try. He got one letter in and he was like, fuck it, I'm not even doing it. He was like, the L, never mind.
Yeah. I don't know how to say this. Linda, Linda used to not
be
Linda,
in touch?
I think. But she was very nice, and she was a Saints fan. She was very nice, and she was a Saints fan just because of Katrina. She's like, I decided the Saints are my team now.
She was a sympathetic Saints fan.
Yeah, she is a sympathetic Saints fan. But
she was an SSF.
Yeah, but she had She didn't have a jersey on, but she had like a
some masking tape that she hand wrote.
No, she had like a little Saints pom-pom that she was during the game.
Oh, she's hardcore, dude. She's hardcore.
Yeah, like if you had a pom-pom, that's hardcore.
You're like trying to like defend her her Saints fandom.
She probably showed up to that bar and was like, "I'm just gonna root for the most desperate dude in the bar. I'm gonna root for that team,
and then I'm gonna take him in the bathroom."
So anyway, that's my Saints story. It was cool. But by the end of by like 1 o'clock, I believe that I was the only straight person in that bar.
And also you found out that Linda was in fact a man.
No, Linda was Linda. We're not gonna disparage people's life choices, Dave. You know.
I'm not disparaging them, I'm just saying.
It was lovely. That's my Saints experience. And it was truly like a Saints California experience. So, Dave, what was your experience?
Well, Ralph, actually, you know, you played a large part in my experience. You know, this was kind of hard for me because obviously I go to all the home games. Haven't missed a home game since 2004. So every single home game I've been to. So you have to eliminate half of the games right there. So I only have half of the games to work with. But no, there was a time. It was probably about 3 years ago. It was one of the 7-9 seasons, and I had to be in. I had to be somewhere for a work, a meeting with my trade association. I own a store, obviously, as everybody knows, and I'm actually, my store and me are actually members of a trade association of other stores like mine from all around the country at different college towns. And I actually happen to be the president of the organization. And so we had a meeting one time wherever. And we had a meeting during a Saints game, and it was the last game of the season. I think it was against the Falcons, and I had an iPad, and Ralph let me use his NFL Network or DirecTV, whatever.
Login, yeah.
Yeah, the login info. So I'm standing there in the front of the room at a podium with the iPad on and the Saints game on, and I have a room full of other store owners, and I'm leading this meeting, and at the same time, and you know, the meeting is, you know, it's multifaceted, you know, it's not, the meeting isn't just me talking, it's people, other people talking and conversations and presenters and that kind of stuff. But so I'm leading this meeting and making sure this meeting goes off without a hitch, all while I'm watching the Saints play the Falcons. And this was the game. Who was it? Somebody had an interception for the Saints, and he like never got interceptions, and he got one late in the game. This was a week 17 game, and I was expecting you guys to remember this. It was a wild ending, and it was the final. The game was pointless. There was no playoff. It was one of the 7-9 seasons, but we won it, and it was like a crazy ending. I don't remember what it was now.
And this sounds like the Tampa game where Jairus Byrd got two picks, no?
Was that the final game of the season?
I think so. Are you talking about the Tampa game where he had two picks?
What year was that?
That's probably, I mean, it was
2016 or 17. No, 16 they got crushed by Atlanta in the season finale. Maybe 2015?
So maybe that was, I don't know. I would have thought it was 2016. But I don't remember it being against Tampa. I remember it being against the Falcons. I'm going to look it up while you guys continue.
Wait, on the road or at home?
On the road.
Oh, no, you were talking to, was it Banjo? No, it was, who was that? Remember he had a come in the slot and he came in the slot, and then they tried to run that curl route to the running back, and he stepped in front of Devontae Freeman and picked it off.
Okay, well, I didn't remember all of those
details.
Oh,
my God, who was that? I think, was it Banjo?
No, he wasn't on the team at the time.
It's not Banjo.
But it was like a third.
Oh, Jamarcus Sanford. It was Jamarcus Sanford. That's who it was.
The kick returner.
Yes. Jamarcus Sanford. It was Jamarcus. God, you guys, I need to come up with a word for it because it's not photographic memory. It's like a Saints-o-graphic memory. I don't know what to call it. But it's
Jamarcus Sanford. It's like, there you go, Andrew.
It was him, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So wait, what year was that? 2016?
2015. God, the years just melt away.
Yeah, they do.
So does
anybody... I remember they interviewed him after the game and they were just like, it kind of blew my mind because he's like, yeah, I've been watching tons of tape of, you know, just in case, because the dude like never saw the field. He was a backup safety, but he was a special teams guy and he never saw the field. And they were like, how did you know he was going to throw it there? And he's like, well, I watched like tons of tape and I just knew in their 2-minute offense, like they always run that route. And so I was kind of expecting it to be there. And sure enough, like he tried to dump it off and he threw it right at me. And I just found it mind blowing that a backup safety that didn't see the field all year was studying the tape that closely that he picked up on that tendency and was able to take advantage of it. I mean, it was incredible.
People in the chat room, fire questions before we get out of here. We'll answer them because since we were doing the live chat, I didn't solicit questions on the Twitters. So let me see if they have any in here. Here's a question. This is from Ninja Coordinator. Our 2015 draft wasn't good, but now that we're bringing in other teams' 2015 first rounders, are we now improving our 2015 draft through the belated back door?
That's a good point. When do we get a replacement for Kyrie Fort?
Yeah, it's a great question. No, I mean, I think what you're seeing more and more is a lot of these draft busts, you know, guys that are out of the league in 2 or 3 years, which happens all the time. I think a lot of teams are just basically saying, hey, come to our rookie camp and we'll see how you stack up against, you know, these UDFAs and these veterans. And so, you know, I think you're seeing more and more. I mean, that's how, who's the center? Lolito? No, it wasn't Lolito. Who was the guard that was on the Saints, the backup guard, like the primary? I think he's still on the team, the veteran. Ralph, help me out.
You're talking Laribius?
Yeah, Laribius. So, like, yeah, Laribius was a veteran, and he had an injury, and so he was out of a job, and he was one of those guys that just showed up at the Saints rookie camp and he ends up getting a contract. So I think you're going to see more and more of that. Guys that are third, fourth, fifth year players that show up to these rookie camps and they actually impress and outperform everyone and they end up getting contracts that way. That's what happened with Laribius. Laribius goes on to end up being a pretty successful backup with the Saints in terms of at least being on the team and being a role player. And so I think you'll see more of this as we get closer to camp.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, the 2015 draft is kind of sneaky terrible. Like, if Pete leaves after this year or they don't extend him, man, that draft is... Ooh. You know, we haven't talked about that Saints did actually make news as we're like in like 52 minutes into this podcast. The Saints actually made news and we didn't ask Dave his opinion on it. They bring in PJ Williams back. Dave, are you as excited as me and Andrew were? I said it was the Saints 2019 secondary is now the best secondary in Saints history now that PJ Williams is going to be back for at least one more year.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I don't necessarily want PJ Williams to be my starting cornerback, but I mean, it's great if that's the quality of your depth and he's your fourth guy or your...
Well, you know the bubonic plague is going to hit their ass in October.
Right, exactly.
It's going to be PJ Williams and Crawley starting the corner. Like,
no, I would be definitely worried about Crawley. I'm all for stockpiling cornerbacks. I think that, you know, just like, it's kind of like running backs, you're gonna need depth and you're gonna need to go to your third and your fourth guys at some point during the season.
Yeah. Andrew, we talked about it last week on the podcast, but for people that aren't, that don't pay $7 a month, but they should, so they would have got it last week before, your thoughts on PJ Williams?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy he's back. I think it's one of those things where, you know, ultimately you're only as good as your fifth corner. I'm glad Ken Crawley's back too. I know he's hated by Saints fans, but I think, you know, you need a fifth guy there, because what happens if two guys go down in camp and, you know, you start playing guys you don't really want to. You don't want that to be UDFAs. You want guys with experience. So,
and the thing about corner is there are a lot of positions like guard or linebacker, or if, you know, if this, God forbid, the Saints had injuries at defensive end, you could like scheme up blitzes and stuff. But the way the NFL is in 2019, you cannot hide. You can't hide. We know it from the 3 years of terrible defense, you know, 14, 15, and 16. You cannot hide shitty corners like Brandon Browner. And you cannot hide when your corners are, when you get so depleted, because what happens is teams just look at it. I mean, they did it when they had, I'm forgetting the name, his nickname on Twitter was Ghost Corner, and he went to Tampa Bay.
BW Webb?
No. He was from Texas A&M, and he was a corner. And he was a UDFA.
Oh, Devontae Harris.
Devontae Harris, yeah. Like, in the Rams game in 2017, the Rams just, at the end of the game, instead of burning clock, they were just like, where's Devontae Harris? Throw it his ass. And they just did it at the end of the game instead of running the ball, because they were like, he can't stop us. And that is what happens when you have injuries at corners. Like, teams will just find them and destroy them. Even, I mean, granted, the Rams, they're a very good offense with McVay and everything, but even bad teams will do that. They just find your bad corner and just throw at them until either they win or the clock hits zero.
If you have shitty corners, you're going to have a bad time.
Let me ask you guys this. If PJ Williams and Patrick Robinson both get through training camp healthy and playing at the level we expect them to.
Hallelujah.
Well, let's
hallelujah.
Let's say that.
Hallelujah.
You done?
Hallelujah.
So.
Just kidding, I'm done.
Eli Apple, we're going to assume he's the number two. So yeah. Who would you want as your nickel guy, P-Rob or PJ?
That's tough, man, because, here's my thing.
I have never seen Patrick Robinson really play well in a Saints uniform. I keep hearing about how well he did in Philadelphia. I haven't seen that yet here in New Orleans. I don't know if it's the low altitude, the humidity. I don't know what it is. But until I fucking see Patrick Robinson actually play well wearing black and gold, I'm not going to fucking believe it. I'm done. Thank you.
I'm not sure we've seen PJ Williams play that well either.
Dude, that Minnesota game was awesome.
He was getting roasted in that game before he made those two plays.
Patrick Robinson had that game on Monday Night Football where he got roasted continually by Michael Vick and then had the 100-yard interception return.
God, that was a thing of beauty.
I think, you know, this is gonna. I think I would go PJ Williams, Andrew, just because of this, and we talked about it. You can knock PJ Williams up and down, but the thing about that dude is he will throw his body around, and he is reckless with his body. And I think in 2019 in the NFL, corners tackling is more important than it used to be even 4 or 5 years ago, because the teams, they run that college offense of these bubble screens and these little pick plays, and corners really have to be aggressive and be able to tackle near their line of scrimmage. And PJ Williams, he'll do that, and he'll throw his body around, and I like that about him. So if you gave me a choice, I think I'd take PJ Williams. As crazy as that sounds. I can't believe it.
Until he gets injured because of his reckless behavior.
Yes. Well, the thing about him is, too, he'll be really motivated, Dave, because he dewied his way out of, like, $20 million.
True that.
Hope it was worth it. New Uber would have only cost him 20.
So
tough break, kid. Tough break.
tough break. He gets $5 million. He can be good again and get another contract. It's not over for him. So let's see. We have one more question. Is there anything else we can do to further lock in the D-line entering next season?
I mean, they've already paid a lot of attention to the D-line. You know, obviously they lose Okafor. Tyler Davidson is still in limbo. Onyemata could be staring at a suspension. We don't know. Rankins is coming back from an injury. He's going to miss probably the beginning of the season. So a lot is weird about the defensive line. So they sign Mario Edwards, who is going to be a role player. Malcolm Brown is probably the big signing of this free agent class for the Saints besides Jared Cook. And, you know, I expect him to play a lot, and I'm hoping that he'll play well. But and then, you know, obviously they've poked around with Quinn and they've poked around with Ansa. So
Ansa's going to happen. I think Ansa's going to happen.
I still think that's still very much in play.
Because the thing is, no other team has offered him anything. And
which is very surprising to me.
Oh, right. Okay. This is Ralph. What you just said is like the red flag. You know what they say in business, if you're making a deal, or you know, you're sitting around a table and you're making a deal and you don't see the loser in the deal, you're the loser. Okay?
Yeah,
so if you're telling me that all these other teams are looking at Ansa and none of them are offering him a deal, then maybe the Saints shouldn't be the ones that offer him a deal.
God, what must that medical report look like for his shoulder? I mean, he must just be awful.
It's like missing a limb, I guess. Or it's like because I found like a baseball sized tumor. But the thing is,
I mean, the thing is, like, a shoulder injury is not that scary to me for a defensive end like that. I mean, knee, I would be like, yeah, that could be bad, or you know, or
well, the
back
thing is,
injury. I'd say, I don't know if he'll ever be the same, but
well, the thing is, I think it could be. With him, is he wants a little bit of something guaranteed, and teams are like, no. And but clearly, my point, Dave, is he's not going to get anything from anybody. So all the offers are going to be equal, right? So I think if
well,
all
is
the
it,
offers,
but is it that, or is it that he wants $10 million because he thinks he's an awesome sack guy, and teams are like, well, we'll give you five, you know, because we know you're a good player, but you're injured, but we're not going to, you know, we're not going to give you what you're asking for. And he's like, no, I want elite pass rusher money.
Well, the thing is for him, think about it this though, Andrew, if his shoulder, which I think it's, his shoulder was bad, because when the agent comes out and says, oh no, we weren't going to do anything anyway until the next medical report came out, which Rappaport reported, like when you admit that, that means his shoulder is fucked. But I think with him is, he may think of it as like, well, look, all these teams are offering me $2, $3, $4 million. You know what? I'm going to wait till August and see if a defensive end gets hurt. And then some team.
And I'll be further along in my rehab.
I'll be further along in my rehab, and teams will be desperate. Because that's what Kenny Vaccaro did, right? He waited and waited and waited. Tennessee had an injury. And instead of the $2 million a year offers he was getting, he got $5 million from Tennessee, because Tennessee was like, oh shit, we need a safety. So I think he could be doing that. And at that price, Dave, I think you would be a sucker. But if he wants to sign for the Saints for the minimum with nothing guaranteed, like, who cares, man? If his shoulder falls off, they just cut him. Like, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
You know?
I'm still annoyed they didn't get Robert Quinn for – 2020.
Oh, that's one thing I was going to mention, because I didn't get a chance to chime in on that while you guys were debating that. So, first of all, I think the compensation is kind of there. There's no way the Saints weren't going to pay a fifth in 2020 or sixth in 2020. In fact, they probably would have upped the offer to a fifth. So, like, this was never about what the Dolphins were going to get in terms of compensation. Like, there was a huge component to this, which was, will Quinn agree to sign a new deal? So this was all about the contract, and it had nothing to do with the compensation, in my opinion. Like, the Saints definitely would have given up that pick to get him. Ultimately, he signed for, what, 1 year, $10 million with Dallas, correct?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, the Saints can't really afford that. I mean, I'm sure Loomis
– They can't?
I mean, I'm sure Loomis could find a way, but like, I don't think they have $10 million in cap space right now. So like, that's the thing. Like,
I thought they had a whole bunch. I thought they had like $18 million.
That was before they signed Jared Cook and PJ Williams. And PJ Williams is $5 million against the cap alone. So,
yeah. And I mean, the thing is, they have a lot of guys coming, and if they have to eject after 1 year on Cooks, you know, and eat $2 million, it's no big deal. But if you have to eat $2 million on Cooks and maybe Murray is bad and it's $2 million here and it's $2 million for that guy, like then it starts to add up. So you don't want to have too many of these contracts that you're finagling and stretching out via Loomis math. You can do two or three of them and figure, you know, one of them, two of them will bomb and you'll have to eat $3 to $6 million. But once you get into the range where you're doing a ton of them and then you're eating, you know, $8, $10, $12 million because you have to kill three or four bad contracts, that's like a really good player. So it gets dicey, you know?
So we got a bunch of people listening or watching live on YouTube. And if you go all the way to the right, let's get the chat going. We've got Ninja Coordinator that's carrying all the weight for you guys. But if you go all the way to the right on that YouTube page, there is a chat option, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, so. And we're going to try to do
is almost over, so maybe next week.
Maybe next week. But just, Ralph, I feel like you need to let people know because I'm guessing a lot of people on the YouTube page don't see the chat on the right.
Yeah. So we're gonna try to do more of these live stream chats in addition to just live streaming the big show. We're gonna try to do more of them as the draft gets nearer. Sign up, do the 7 minutes of Saints. It's $7 a month. You get a bunch of extra podcasts. Do it.
Oh yeah! Remember, you hear that music.
And remember, everybody on Patreon, on May 1st. Gets a free beer koozie. So get yourself to Patreon if you haven't already. Do it now. So for Dave, for Andrew, for Kevin, who's drunk watching WrestleMania, I'm Ralph Marlboro. Until next week, the bar is closed.
Are you guys going to send me a koozie?